serial device. Other serial devices have some LCD modules, but personally, I think it's a bit of a waste of a serial port. But I tend to move on to timing sensitive devices, where you want a quick response. I tend to put things like a trigger on a laser tag gun or tagger. I'll get into that term a bit later. Rotary encoders, where you've got monitor for each pulse coming in. So pencil those in on a interrupt pin. Then of course you've got I tend to do the bus devices, so I2C, which is really handy for expanding the input output. So if you find start running out of pins, or you want to use seemingly 100 or 1,001 possible devices you could run on off that. Otherwise SPI, which is a much faster bus, but I tend to treat it the same thing. They're on different pins on the Arduino or the AVR at Mega chip, and then the other various peripherals or devices such as the LCDs, LEDs, switches, where you don't need a great deal of response. So if you can say that a tenth of a second might be quick enough in some cases. As I said, Pankow skirmish. It's just that laser tag, the beauty that drew me to it was the longer range. Some people are claiming 1,200 feet, or what's that, 400 and something meters. I haven't verified that, and of course the definition of what is a tagger? It's really the gun, weapon, whatever's firing a infrared packet at something else. So it could be a simulated Claiborne mine, whatever's up to you, leave it up to your imagination. That's about the limitations of it. It's just a nice generic non politically correct, not threatening terminology to use when it may not be that you're building it into a gun. You could be building it into, say, a Star Trek phaser or something. So getting into the Arduino, I chose the Arduino because it's an easy level entry. Someone can pick it up in about 20 minutes flat. I think we did a tutorial a couple of years ago with, I think we had about seven people got through the Hello World and in the hour or so that we had allocated. I didn't quite finish that. Large community, so you can generally find plenty of examples of how you get the Arduino to talk to this whatever it is. So in this case, I've got a little sound evaluation board. I'm happy to pass it around. So that's just got a chip on board underneath the black blob for recording sounds. Not exactly cheap, but not prohibitively expensive. But the chip itself is a whole lot cheaper. So let's pass that around for those that are interested. And of course, it's just about totally open source. I said almost because it's the later Arduinos have moved the USB device into the main processor, which then means that you need a vendor ID and a product ID, which as a hobbyist, just not going to happen. So that's a bit of a point of contention. I basically wanted to do a a totally open source hardware software from end to end, i.e. player to player, as well as back to a server system. From what I've seen, there's no one else has actually tackled this one. So I'm developing with the help of Connected Community Hackspace, which meets down in Hawthorne.
Mm-hmm.
So a hackspace is sort of a group of people coming together to work on projects that might be from different fields. So you might be able to say a hardware person that doesn't know the first thing about software, or grew up in the discrete logic days or whatever. And then someone that's software and they're scared of a soldering iron. We've almost had that sort of extreme, and plenty of students. So the my system, a Gorilla Tag is basically broke down into a few different subsystems. So the infrared emitter, which is a light emitting diode, or if you in a very generic term, a light bulb type system. The infrared sensor, I've got one here, I won't pass it around because it's currently in a circuit, but come over and have a look at it. So that's, I'll get into further details. There's a focusing lens, because a TV remote, so if you point it in that direction, it's going to be splatting out the infrared sort of over there. It also
and behind me,
exactly.
Yeah,
so you can point it at the wall and it'll still get the TV. So good fun.
Gets changed.
Yeah, or the volume, and you're not sure where the remote is. It's behind the couch. So the infrared generator, which is an example of that, is going around the tables. I think it's over there at the moment. I'll break that down into why I'm sort of moving to a discrete device, and also wanted some sort of radio module, so you can sort of say communicate to all the players, start game, or might even be sort of starting 5 minutes if it's a bigger game field and they've got to walk 200 meters or whatever it is to the start position. That's about that as a breakdown. If I'm going too quick for someone, let me know. It's a fair bit of material to sort of cover in one shot. But
how large can the infrared
as in focused down to?
Yeah.
Some people are sort of claiming a foot, but the trouble is you're trying to hit a sensor that's, you're probably not going to see that too well, but it's, size of your little finger, way over there. You don't want it really parallel, you want it diverging a little bit, but a couple of feet at a couple hundred metres. So it's one of those things that you start doing a bit of range testing and experiment with a bit. Fortunately, that's not important. That really comes back to the lens, which for focus it down. So, sort of it's the same thing. As kids, we've probably all taken a magnifying glass out into the sun, to burn a bit of paper, or take a few ants. I don't know. And we get a longer range and also increase the accuracy rather than almost painting the room with infrared light and getting everyone in the room. And the other one is, of course, to drive the infrared emitter with the PWM, which is pulse width modulation, for doing a sort of a carrier wave. I'll get into that a bit later. The sensor is basically detecting the signal from the infrared, does a bit of processing inside the sensor itself, so it'll suppress interference from there isn't one in this room, but fluoro tubes, The sun, and yeah, anything that's not within the, you know, what it's expecting. So it's just even as simple, there's about six different layers, and you know, so it sort of, you know, reshapes the, you know, the incoming signal into more of a digital signal, so you're not dealing with, you know, so you're not having to process that after it gets out of that sensor. Lens, so it's a you know, a convex lens to you know, match the LED. That's the details actually in the reference, so I won't go into that. Plastic or glass doesn't really make much difference. The big killer is you know, the use of iron in the glass, which makes it more scratch resistant, but it also you know, stops some of the infrared from passing through. So sort of it's a translucent to infrared light, or can be. So that gets us into the sound generator. You can use the Arduino for doing, you know, beeps and other sounds, but yes, it's not exactly the most you know, most thrilling. You know, might be okay for the kids, and it's cheap, but not exactly, you know, the best use. I'm sort of, you know, leaning towards using a sound recording chip that's gone around the room. Otherwise, you could build your own sort of to decode, a, you know, a WAV file on an SD card. It's not a simple exercise, but getting distracted by those downstairs. Yeah, so that's it's almost a sub project, you know, by itself. So I'm sort of sticking with something that's on the you know, off the shelf, so to speak. Radio module for, you know, communicating between the servers and other players or taggers. Could also be some static, you know, targets, or, you know, various other devices. The main thing is, you know, find something that works and you're comfortable with. The Digi Zigbee modules, or used to be you know, Maxstream XB modules. They're very good. Mesh networking. So if one of the devices go down for whatever reason, battery goes flat or something like that, you know, it'll route around that a bit of damage. It's not something that you have to program in. It's all there in the silicon. It's not an open source hardware. And the other issue is that there can only be one coordinator, i.e., sort of, if you like, a, you know, only one end gateway. It's a difficult one to explain. Sort of, there isn't really a good you know, Wi-Fi analogy. Otherwise, the RFB is totally open. You can download the source. You can modify it. You could even do some pre-processing of the incoming radio packet without. You know, to reject it earlier than sort of than just, you know, relaying everything to the main Arduino, but it is very low level, so you're basically handling your error correction and everything yourself. And it doesn't do mesh and various other limitations. So the basic protocol is that, you know, a player, you know, shoots, and we'll assume that it has hit a target. The target makes a sound. You can then record, you know, those details on the two devices and tally them up at the end of the game. Otherwise, for a bigger field where you've got more people, it might be, you know, a few hundred meters between, you know, end of game fields. Or end of the beach, the game field, or the, you know, where you're playing, and if you're sort of hitting someone at a distance, say 50 metres away, you're not going to hear the sound that they've been hit. So instead, you use a radio packet to send information back to say that so I have been hit, and you could keep on going, so you could sort of do a, you know, I don't know, you know, sort of a you know, some sort of missile. So you do the lock on before you can fire. That sort of carry on. Leave that on, going up to your imagination.
How much encoding goes in the radio packets? Is it one of the ones where it's a big long packet and actually every character is scattered throughout the packet and there three times? Or
yeah,
you're
generally with the Zigbee, you're actually getting just the so the. The source and destination has already been stripped off. Well, you can get to it, but in general use, you know, it's already been stripped off. So you're just getting the payload coming out of the serial port of the RF module, and then you just have to say, and then you just have to having to parse it. So you sort of say, is this packet valid? Does it have the, you know, sufficient you know, number of bytes? If not, throw it away and ask for it again. Or you do it or the sender, you know, waits for an acknowledgement to come back, sort of saying yes, I did get that and it was valid. So, but the Digi, you know, Zigbee, you know, modules do actually do a lot of the error correction itself. So it's not like FSK frequency shift keying, I think it is,
is that? It's quite low level. You don't have IP or anything.
Because an IP packet's, you know, pretty large. You can get what is this? 6 low pan. So it's a variation of IPv6, but you know, based on it sort of being simplified. So you're not sending a large packet, which is going to take a while to send over a serial port. So some uses might be to, you know, configure all the taggers. So you might sort of, you know set how many times they can fire, you know, reload times, all those sort of basic statistics. Assigning players, and then at the end you even during the game you could you know tally those statistics and sort of so I could, you know, pretty graphs and, you know.
You could make the whole game like scriptable in Lua,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. So it's again, the limits is really your imagination again. So that's fairly high level, but I really didn't want to get into too much of the detail for time purposes. And the main one, so I'm getting towards the end. I was going to open this up to a few more questions rather than covering it all. The main one is, don't be stupid. We've had, or the industry is, you know, in America has had a few, you know, close shaves where someone decides to make something too realistic that they then start playing in public. But, you know, someone walking their dog gets freaked and you end up with sort of 17 cops rocking up.
Tag them.
Well, yeah, tag them and bag them. The big one is, from a safety perspective, is don't use infrared lasers. Because apparently, not enough research, I didn't find anything in a medical journal or anything like that, but you know, with infrared light, if it's too bright, you don't get a blink reflex.
I've got a friend who works with lasers. She says this, like, you have to be careful of infrared lasers. Yeah.
Infrared lasers are just nasty. You just don't go there. If you really got your heart set on doing an aiming, you know, laser sight itself, fair enough. Just be careful. Getting back to the first point. Don't make it too realistic. Some people have more fun with something that's like, you know, that looks more like a sci-fi, phaser, say out of Star Trek, or you name the genre, something Star Wars if you prefer. Spooking the public, don't do it. Get permission if you're going to be doing it on public properties. So there's been several schools here in Melbourne that has hosted laser tag events sort of at a small run. So yeah, that's you know, get permission, preferably in writing. Let them know sort of a week behind, so as a reminder, just so smooth over any misunderstandings before they happen, and enjoy yourself, game on, so to speak. Any other questions?
How easy would it be to integrate it with, say, augmented reality sort of stuff? So,
yes, I've thought about that one. So you'd run incorporate a GPS module into the tagger, so the tagger is aware of where you are in the world, and you sort of match up the virtual world to the real world, and hopefully sort of when you fire in the virtual world, or when someone fires at you in the virtual world, it'll you'll get hit and vice versa. So it's one of those scenarios where I think if we can get the RF and the infrared protocol figured out, as you can then put over the top these the extra layers. So I thought to myself, I think it's the next slide.
Make it modular.
Yeah, make it modular. So my thought was to do a remotely controlled vehicle. So like a UAV, but it's driven. So repurpose a kid's ride on electric car or a Jeep, because it's a very cheap platform. Fairly big, but if you happen to run into someone's leg, it's the worst it's probably going to do is just a bruise rather than a broken leg. If you made it more substantial, fair bit of hardware involved. So it's not something I want to tackle immediately. So a couple of cameras and a gimbal mounted tagger. So you can aim it, and you know what what you're sort of pointing at. With the off-road, remotely, so it'd be a wirelessly operated system. The reason this came up was, say, I've got a good friend who's housebound and wheelchair bound if she's able to get out of the house. So it was just a way of making the game more inclusive, accessible, and even if it's just someone that's broken a leg, a week before the event, and just being able to include them. I could probably do a very rough estimate of what it would cost to build that up, and as a group, because a group project, sort of get together six people, it's not too bad. I'm currently working on the infrared protocol. We've got the optics to deal with, then the radio comms. I'm attending Barcamp Melbourne, which I assume everyone knows about.
No.
No? Okay. You ever heard of Barcamp?
No.
Okay. Barcamp is a unconference, so everyone attending is expected to contribute. So if it's the official line is, if it's your first Barcamp, then you must do a talk. I tend to gather a bit more of a softer line and say, if you see some dishes in the sink that someone hasn't washed, you know, wash them, because no one's there to pick up after everyone. So you contribute, ask questions, get involved, and then sort of just take along your laptop and sit in the back row. So I'm hoping to get a proof of concept of this system to.
How are we going on time?
Yeah, so I'm hoping to get a proof of concept to Barcamp in late July. So I've still got a fair bit of time, but I'm doing a commercial laser tag. So it's human versus zombies. The zombies cannot fire back, which means that the players can't be hit either. So it's a bit interesting. I'd love to find some web-based graphing software, so you can sort of annotate, the graph. So you might be plotting a player's hit points, and then at each point when the line actually changes, you might sort of put an arrow and say player reloaded, or ran into the next zombie, squad of zombies or whatever. Just so that people got a bit of an idea. So what did I get hit so badly all of a sudden? And it could have just been that you reloaded too late, started running out of ammo, all of those things is sometimes you can't, figure out, during the game. I think that's about it. Just a bit of a recap. Yeah, so it's just paintball without the paint and mess. I'm trying to repurpose as much as possible, so I'm trying not to reinvent the wheel. Especially when it sort of comes up with building an actual, tagger. You don't want to be, grabbing a bit of MDF or plywood and trying to carve into that. You'll be there for the next 10 weeks. In the meantime, sort of nothing else is progressing. So, especially initially, just grab a Nerf gun and gut that and use it. So, which quite a few people have done in the past. I figure if we get the protocols right, and then you can start building on those foundations without too much revisiting of the protocol. I think that's about it. Yeah, just some reference material. Oops. Sorry.
So with this sound device, can you record on it? Can you?
Yeah. So that'll record as well as playback. It's controlled by the SPI device. A little bit nasty, but I'm slowly getting through doing a library to obfuscate all the nastiness. So I can just say, plays sample 3, which might be a. Obviously, say your tagger firing, as a semi-realistic, or sound 5 might be say the a science, a more of a sci-fi, a soundscape.
What's it recorded to?
It's actually recording onto the chip that's underneath that the black blob, rather.
Oh, okay. And how many samples can you put on?
You got 150 seconds with that particular one. 150 90s is becoming plenty because if you're firing, it's just 10th of a second.
Yep.
So you really can get a lot of material into sort of 90 seconds and or even 150. The cost difference isn't much.
Can you get voices? Yeah.
Yeah, you could do voices because it's not synthesized. It is actually a digital approximation of what you recorded onto it.
Okay.
So are you recording directly onto that via the mic on that chip, or are you able to load waves as well?
You basically plug it into the line out port of a serial port and then record straight onto the sound. Sound chip.
Okay.
So,
look. Recording a device, we can actually send the file as such.
Not directly.
You'd have to play it to the device.
You've got to play it. But the idea is that you sort of send a command, say start recording, and then start playing the sound to it.
From a production point of view, if you're talking about doing a couple of hundred of these things.
Oh yeah, it may not necessarily scale, but I'm sort of talking about only doing maybe 20 and yeah. So it's one of those things. If you're going into serious production, you don't want to revisit the idea.
20
is quite tedious. Yeah. Oh, 20. But it's not going to be. Well, if you automate it, you should get the timing all the same. So it shouldn't be that different. Certainly, if you're going to do a limited production run, you'd want to revisit, perhaps do a something using an SD card and actual WAV files. MP3s take a bit of time to decode, so you've got a delay there. But yeah, that's almost a sub project in itself. Any other questions?